Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome back to the Disruption Zone. I want to welcome my friend John Guerin. His Dr. John Guerin. He's the BB&T Professor of Economics at Gatton College of Business and Economics, University of Kentucky, and founding director and an affiliate of the Institute of the Study of Free Enterprise at the University of Kentucky as well. Welcome, sir. It's good to talk to you. How are you?
Fine. It's glad to be here. Glad to talk to you, Leland. It's been a while.
I wanted to have you on because I think free enterprise is under attack. I think capitalism is under attack in a major way in our country right now. And I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what capitalism is. And I want to get into that. You're also in an interesting and unique situation. I have a lot of respect for the UK Gatton College of Business. It is a lighthouse, I think, in a world of academia that seems to and sometimes be losing its path in terms of like open and free thought. And so it must be interesting to work in on a little island like that. But as a professor, as a free market thinker, as an economist, do you feel free in the world of academia?
Good question. I think largely, yes. I mean, I feel like I have to be very careful with the way I phrase things and the way I put things. But you should be, right? When you're trying to express ideas, you should be careful about how they're phrased. I do feel that there are some subjects that can come up in an economics class as well as other classes that, well, you have to tiptoe around. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not speaking specifically of any particular thing that's happened to me or any institution, but just the feel I get is that it's just a real cautiousness of what one needs to can say. Largely, you know, I am able to express my opinions and the like, but just the what I'm reading in newspapers and following online, I keep hearing stories of people who are really being harassed because they're expressing a view that is, you know, legitimate to talk about. So yeah. I feel a little worried about that.
Yeah. There are some courageous people, though, recently that have come forward. Just yesterday, I posted this on Facebook that there was a group of academics, activists, and progressive people that were like, look, we got to have this open and free dialogue. You know, I've got a lot of friends on the left side of the aisle, and traditional leftists or traditional progressives in America are not trying to burn buildings down. They are open and tolerant of other ideas. They may disagree with those of us that would be more on the right side of things, but and they may disagree on the size of government and sometimes the role of government. But it was nice to see. It was nice to see my liberal friends kind of going, "Hey, wait a minute. We are still in support of free speech. We're still in support of the free exchange of ideas." And I think that if you don't have the free exchange of ideas, you have nothing. You know.
Right. So, yeah, and it's good that there are people out there who are perhaps left to center who maybe disagree with us on the particular policies, but who are interested in having the discussion and the debate and not shutting it down.
Yeah.
So I hope those folks you know, kind of come to the fore, so to speak, and that I feel like they're being drowned out.
Yeah.
Now, part of that maybe is a media bias. You know, the stuff that the media covers is kind of, you know, more out there kind of stuff sometimes because it's, you know, it's not dog bites man doesn't make the news, right? It's man bites dog.
Right. So, if it bleeds, it leads.
yeah, that's right. So yeah, I'm hoping that good sense kind of will rule the day here in the end.
I think that sort of brings us to why I wanted to have you on too, because I want to do a defense of capitalism, if you will, a defense of free enterprise and free markets. Let me start with this. Do you think that, in a way, those of us who support capitalism, free enterprise, have sort of created an opening for some of what's happening in terms of attacking capitalism by allowing over the decades capitalism to get melded with something else entirely? In other words, we don't actually have the freest markets in the Western world, in America. Mm-hmm. There are other countries mm-hmm. who have maybe even bigger governments and bigger subsidies, but they have freer markets. And I think there's become this situation, because the Nordic countries, a lot of people point to and say, hey, well, right. they have socialism. Well, in a couple of cases in the Nordic countries, they actually have way freer markets than we have here. They pay high taxes. But in terms of the right. ability to right. open a business, do things and do things with what you right. have left over, they're actually much freer right. than us. Do you think we've opened up a door to attack capitalism by melding capitalism and government, i.e. crony capitalism?
Yeah, I think that is a huge issue. And in fact, I don't even like to use those terms anymore. I have come to call it cronyism
right.
and not crony capitalism, because it's not capitalism.
Right.
Capitalism is where you can, buy and sell as you wish. You can open businesses, change jobs, kind of do what you want, as long as it's with, kind of with the consent of others, right? I can't say, well, I want that car, and so take it. I've got to buy it from someone. Right. So as long as it's voluntarily done with others, that's part of free enterprise or capitalism, is that you have control over what you do. But the other part, another part of it, is that you have claim on the income that you earn from your own efforts. And so, you buy, sell, whatever, or if you just want to goof off, yeah, you can do that as well.
I just mailed my taxes from last year. I don't feel like I have claim on my income. I'm just saying.
I know.
Sorry,
well,
go ahead.
That's
I didn't interrupt you.
Well, that's the issue with the Nordic countries. They do allow you can kind of buy and sell what you want to. You can open businesses. You can trade internationally and so on. Licensing of businesses is not that big of a deal. Restrictive licensing. But you keep maybe half of what you earn,
right?
And sometimes less,
right?
And so, in terms of your rights to the fruit of your labor, is diminished.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that really full? Is that really socialism? Well, no, it's not socialism in the typical sense. The typical sense of socialism is that the government controls what you buy to some extent, what gets produced,
right.
Where it gets delivered, and et cetera. And Sweden doesn't do that kind of thing. But boy, they take a lot of the fruits of your labor. So it's not socialism, but boy, they are impinging upon, I think, your individual liberties as an individual.
Right.
So that's not socialism. It's got elements of capitalism in it, but in terms of freedom to trade and do what you want to do, but now cronyism is not really capitalism either. Mm-hmm. Where that's sort of a those with heavy influence over government, usually big business, big unions, are able to get their way.
Right,
and they get legislation passed that favors them. Lower taxes, subsidies, restricted competition, government contracts directed towards, the pals of government. And so that means if I'm not a pal, I don't get to open businesses like I want to, buy and sell what I want to,
right.
compete where I want to. So that's very much an impingement on individuals' economic liberties. That's not capitalism.
Right.
That's heavy influence of government. So I think in many people's minds, when you say capitalism, people are thinking of cronyism.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it isn't. Yeah. And it isn't.
I wonder,
sometimes the cronies will allow, sometimes the crony governments will allow people to engage in trade, that when they don't regulate it, but it's kind of up to them.
Right.
Right? It's not up to you.
Yeah. I wonder if we've sort of created a problem for this argument, too, because I got into a spat on Twitter the other day with somebody because I, you know, when Elon Musk brought the NASA astronauts back to Earth, and I said, hey, capitalism, you know, and I acknowledge that Elon Musk has been heavily subsidized by the government. But the private sector did something the government could not do for an enormously cheaper price than the government could have done it.
Right.
And without freedom to engage in free in enterprise, Elon Musk would have never even entered this. Okay, so it's an imperfect system. I get it. But I was basically making the broader point that this, you know, this is what happens when you're free to pursue your interests. And somebody on the progressive side of the aisle comes back and says, you know, I'm a hypocrite because of all the socialist tax breaks that he got. He's actually, this person who came back at me was actually using some of what I've heard the right say against us. In other words, we've misdefined both capitalism and socialism. Capitalism,
probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in America, the left is quick to say cronyism is capitalism, and that's what capitalism is, and we're going to define it as such, and therefore it is an unfair system. Whereas on the right, we are quick to decry any government's expenditure or government expansion as socialism, and therefore we leave both sides leave themselves open to these, you know, major hypocritical arguments where it's like that's not socialism isn't necessarily building a whole lot of infrastructure, you know. Socialism isn't necessarily, because I always I've even had people tell me, well, your fire department and police is socialism. No, it's not. I pay taxes for the basic common good. It's not the same thing as if this if the government came and said, you cannot make this widget, you must make this one. So I don't know. I feel like we've kind of misdefined both forms of economics.
We have. And I think this a lot of this goes back to what's the appropriate role of government.
Right.
And I think even in a free enterprise capitalist society, there is a role of government. And it's a very, very important role, but it is a limited role. And if it gets in, and if you get it wrong, then things go wrong.
Right.
So typically, you know, we rely in a free enterprise or capitalist society, we rely on people engaging in voluntary actions, kind of doing the kind of business that they want involuntarily, buying and selling things, and or voluntarily taking leisure and having lower income, right? But what that relies on is a couple of many critical things, and it relies on basically respect for one another's rights, and that we each, you know, there's an understanding, and we oftentimes need government to enforce these understandings, is that there's an understanding that who owns what, which things are mine and which things are yours. And if you want something of mine, you have to buy it from me. And if I want something of yours, I have to buy it from you.
Right.
We call that, I guess, in a broad sense, that's property rights. Who owns what?
Right.
And, you know, you own actually, and that term I think is misunderstood as well, because one of the most valuable things that each of us has is our brain power. Mm-hmm. And you're basically, when you're working for someone else, you're renting your brain power to someone else. And so that's an exchange. And so you have the rights to your brain power. That's property rights, even though people don't often use it that way. So we need to have a system where people respect one another's property rights, so to speak, and also have a system where we are not engaging in fraudulent exchanges, where I sell you one thing and it's really another.
Yeah.
That's contracts.
Right.
And those are embedded in a system where we have individual rights. So government enforcement of those rights is very, very important and allows us to do what we want, so to speak, as long as we're not impinging on the rights of others.
Yeah.
Enable people like Elon Musk to, even though he does get government subsidies, but he is also very, very entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm.
He has these ideas.
Right.
And he can try them if he can get voluntary, you know, funders to do it. And so you get lots of new and interesting things where you don't have to get permission from the government.
Right.
Or in times past, these would be permissions from the crown or the church to do things.
Right.
You don't have to do that. And so that's how, you know, societies advance.
It is how societies advance, and there is a decided effort right now to try to destroy that. It was interesting when you brought up brain power, that's your personal property, and that when you are working with someone, you're sort of leasing out your brain power. Mm-hmm. I love that thought process. I've always had a saying that I've told people. I was like, I'm always like, look, if you consider yourself the CEO of Self Incorporated, and you consider your boss your customer, and you consider your work your product, it'll change your life. And essentially what I mean by
that. I've heard you say that on the air.
Yeah. And what I essentially mean by that is that it's literally a matter of envisioning who is in control of your destiny, right? Because so many people, and I've heard it so many times, you go to work and it's like, oh, I got to go to work. We're going to the old salt mines. I've never viewed my work as the salt mines, right? Whether I'm employed by a fast food restaurant, which I've been, or whether I am employed by a major media conglomerate, which I've been, you know, but that brings us to a whole nother aspect of this discussion, because one of the things I had my good friend, State Senator Morgan McGarvey on the podcast last episode, he's very liberal. And we were talking about the disincentive to work with the extra $600 a week in federal benefits for unemployment. And he made the same sort of comment that I hear a lot of folks on the left say, and that is, well, you know, if people are staying home because of this, maybe we're not paying them enough in the first place. And that we started down this discussion about value, right? And so my very first job ever in life was cleaning this dirty, nasty, disgusting grease room of a fast food restaurant. It wasn't an official job. I wasn't officially on payroll. It was the lady who owned it. It was a little greasy spoon. She was like, I'll give you $20 a week if you keep this clean. That was my first job. You know, $20 a week translated to about, I don't know, $250 an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I did that. And it was like, I did that. And guess what I did after that? 2 years later, I ran my own custodial business at the age of 16. Wow. I parlayed that into doing custodial work for various businesses around town because there wasn't a lot of jobs available where I was, but there were people who would pay me to clean out their grease room. And by then I was making a lot more money. And it was like, if you view yourself as self-incorporated, it changes whether you feel like you're subservient to someone or whether you're saying, I'm selling you a product and I'm going to give you the best of that product. And it also changes the way people look at you, right? Like, I've never had a boss that was happy to see me go because there was always this idea of that loss of productivity when you walk out the door. So that brings us kind of to that discussion about wages in a capitalistic free enterprise system being tied directly to productivity. There's this misnomer out there in our society today that you got to pay a living wage. Well, you have to provide work that provides the value that is equal to a living wage.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the most important, I guess, a couple of the most important things that an individual worker can have is, first of all, their skill set and sort of attitude, work ethic. That's incredibly important. But the second thing that's incredibly important is competition for their services.
Right.
And if you've got multiple employers who are after you, so to speak, then that's gonna raise your wages until kind of to the level of your productivity.
Right.
Because if employer A is not paying your productivity, employer B or C or D or F will compete for you. And so those are the most important things. And a growing economy is important as well. So those are the most important things an individual worker can have. So if you somehow try to mandate that workers should be paid more, well, that comes out of somebody somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're
yeah.
One way in which you can get ahead is being more productive. And being more productive means you produce more goods and services, and so your employer can pay you more because more is being made and sold.
Right.
But if you just mandate, I get paid more, well, that comes out of somebody somewhere. That means higher prices, less profit, less employment. And that is not really a way in which the economy as a whole workers as a whole move ahead. It's right. just, you know, torpedoing someone else.
Well, if you tell a business, so, if you tell a business, okay, I've got 10 people and they're all providing a service worth $10 an hour right now. And if the government comes along and says, now you have to pay them all $15 an hour, okay? Their hour of work at $10 an hour was providing you with $2 of profit. Their hour of work at $15 an hour is providing you with no profit and a loss. So right. what are you going to do? You're going to remove several of those so that you only have six or seven of those workers at $15 an hour so that you can still make that $2 an hour profit on their productivity, because that's the whole point of them working in the first place, is to provide the profit. And so then you're going to find other ways to sort of streamline, automate, or do the job differently so that those most, and when you do that, you're going to take only the very skilled of the skilled are going to be in that group of six, and those others are going to be out without anything. That's what you do right. when you force a business owner to pay more. You don't actually raise people's wages. You tighten that competition pool, and you tighten that pool of labor, and you force people out who don't have the skill set to provide $15 an hour worth of value. It's a set finite thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is just no way to improve the lot of the average worker. I mean, the way in which the average worker's lot improves is just what we said. You've got to have a good skill set, work ethic, competition for your services in a growing economy. And that's going to move people ahead.
Right.
Long term, if you try to just mandate higher wages, well, there's a few people who will benefit from that, but it's not going to raise the masses of
right.
Low income or average people's wages up.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Those six that get to keep their jobs will get $5 more an hour. But
right.
what about
yeah.
the four that lost theirs? You know?
Yeah. So but this is where free enterprise comes in. Right. People are compete for your services. People figure out better ways to do things, and the workers help do that. And so productivity goes up, standards of living goes up. This is all based on individuals deciding for themselves how to, allocate their time, energies, and efforts, both employers and employees.
Go ahead.
The big picture is that it works. I mean, it's not perfect.
Right.
Nothing is perfect. And there's going to be unfairness and whatnot that happens. But the big picture is that if you impede that, you're going to be causing more harm than good.
Well, we used to not argue politically over capitalism. America was a capitalist nation, and everyone accepted that. And the left and right simply argued over the size of government. Like, how much of your income are we going to take, and what are we going to do with it? That's what we argued over. It wasn't yeah. whether or not you could go make an income. It wasn't whether or not you could go start a business. It wasn't whether or not you could go do right. these things. Now we have a faction of those on the left that are arguing, we want to tear the system down because the system is racist, or the system is sexist, or the system is unfair fundamentally. And I feel like there's an element of that that is essentially trying to redefine what freedom is. And in their minds, freedom is the ability to do anything you want and not pay the consequences of not having enough money at the end of the week. You know what I mean?
Right.
Versus freedom yep. is I can go and be productive, and I can come up with new ideas. That's hard. That's a challenge. That requires a lot of me, but I am free to pursue it. So I'm disturbed by this shift in the argument by at least some in the quarters on the left, whereas, again, we used to argue over how big do we want our government to be versus, uh-huh. The system by which it operates. So that's the scary part.
Yes, it is. And I think just me demanding that I should have free health care or free college or whatever, of course, I'm way past that age, that's not really a good definition of freedom, because who is going to provide those things? You're basically forcing someone else to give me something.
Right.
And that's not freedom. That's right. That's not free enterprise. And I think we also get this sort of related to this is that cronyism is in the mix here as well, because people think of the cronyist system as being unfair. And I think it is. There's a lot of unfairness in that, where in the sense of, and you get a lot of, unproductive things happening as well.
Right.
Where if you're connected to government somehow or another, you get favors. And just because you happen to curry those favors or know someone, and that system stinks.
Right.
And we ought to move away from that kind of a system.
Right.
But the system a lot of people on the left favor is even more government.
Yeah.
So when you have more government, then you get even more cronyism. Where now, how do you get ahead in a government run economies? Well, you've got to influence government.
Right.
But you've got to schmooze with the local boards and bureaus and whatnot, and somehow deliver votes or political influence to them. And that's the way in which you get ahead. That's the way in which competition occurs, in sort of that kind of uber crony environment.
Well, what you're describing is very simple too. This is the thing that people who espouse the idea of socialism think that they are ending the unfairness of money because money leads to power structures, right? What you're describing is that the human situation is that we seek control over our own destiny, and then when we get that, a lot of times we will imperfectly seek the control over others' destiny. That's humanity. The system of capitalism is apolitical, and human beings will always seek currency. We will always seek currency. We will always seek wealth. It's what we do because we are innately designed to seek after our and our family's best interests. So in the socialistic system, that currency still exists. It's just not money. It's power. It's political power and influence. So
right.
In a way, crony capitalism is drifting in that direction. Because you have once the government is in control of the production means, then in order to have any sense of well-being and wealth and currency, you have to be influential politically, which means you have to do what? You have to follow the government's orders. I mean, it's the same. If you want to say that capitalism is greedy, capitalism isn't greedy. People are greedy, and they will be greedy no matter which system of currency they operate in. And if you ask me, if you have $5 million, Dr. Guerin, and I only have $100, you have far less power over me with your $5 million. Yes, you have more power than me. You can buy more things. You can influence more things than I can. But you have a lot less power over me than somebody who has influence over the government, who can say, hey, this guy over here with $100, go arrest him and throw him in jail because he's saying things I don't like.
Right. Absolutely. Or he can't buy certain things or spend his life certain ways. That's right. And I agree. You just have changed the coin of the realm from, buying and selling, voluntary exchange, oftentimes with cash, to schmoozing government officials with which can be actually some pretty nasty things, and that kind of stuff can happen.
Yeah.
Now, I don't even think, I don't like to use the term greed, even though I think self-interest, maybe it just sounds nicer, but self-interest really is not so much about greed, because there's self-interest is about doing what makes you feel good.
Right. Well, greed is the distortion of self-interest. Self-interest is not bad in and of itself. Greed is just the distortion of it. Yeah.
And it's really about doing what, determining my own life in the way I think it should be determined. Now, I may want to give away a bunch of stuff or be nice to the people around me. And a lot of people are like that. So it's more sort of self-determination, I think, is what self-interest is. And we ought to allow people to determine how they live their life. So, there is certainly a large element of human nature that they want to look out for themselves and their families and their loved ones and people close to them.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. And it's going to manifest itself. That's going to manifest itself in any system. And the cronyist system, it manifests itself in an ugly way. And in a socialist system, it just sort of ramps that up.
Right.
Becomes even uglier. And so I think we do need to get away from cronyism, but we need to move it more towards free enterprise, individual voluntary action and not forcing things, forcing people to do things that the government says they should do.
How do we win back that moral ground from an argument standpoint or a debate standpoint? Because I feel like conservatives have sort of walked ourselves into this box by not being pissed off enough about crony capitalism. You know what I mean? It's like we tend to not get really that riled up about it when Amazon doesn't pay any taxes, you know, and yet you have this major business. I love big business. Big business hires a lot of people, but I also love small business because small business can become big business, right? I love great ideas. And Jeff Bezos had a great idea, and I love his mantra too. It's like, we're going to provide a great product at the to people at a reasonable price in the quickest manner possible. That is a solid business idea that solves an economic problem. I love that. But you get him not paying almost any taxes at all because of, you know, I mean, he's able to go around the country and get these governments to say, here's all the things we'll let you do if you come here that we won't let anyone else do, right? And there's like there's very little anger about that from the conservative side. And I'm like, if we had been more protective of people's individual rights and small businesses, and we would probably not be in a situation where we cannot win moral ground arguments on this, even though we're fighting against a system that's even less moral than what we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we do tend to compromise on sort of, I mean, in politically, you know, you've got to compromise on some things. That just,
sure.
Or nothing will happen. But we oftentimes compromise on fundamental principles that we ought not to.
Yeah.
So, you know, we find Republicans kind of taking Democratic ideas and watering them down halfway and saying, okay, we'll do this. Well, but if it's a crazy idea, then now you're only half crazy. that doesn't do us any good, right?
Right.
So, and if the Republicans are standing up for half crazy ideas, then you know that doesn't help much.
Right.
So, an example would be, you know, this there's been these big push for a long time for these. I guess we haven't heard about it too much lately, but about. You know, low water flow shower heads and toilets.
Right.
And actually, in most parts, certainly most parts of the United States, that water is pretty abundant, and it costs way, way, way more to, you know, build and install these low flow toilets than any water that you're going to save. It just doesn't make sense. Because water in most parts of the U.S. is very, very abundant, with some exceptions. So we have, you know, more left-leaning people pushing these low-flow toilet things really hard, and the Republicans saying, oh, no, we'll only do it halfway. Well, the whole idea is stupid.
Right, so, right.
So I think, you know, another example would be back in the W. Bush administration, where they expanded Medicare to include drugs, a lot of drugs, which in some ways...
Prescription
drugs. So in some ways that made sense, but they didn't do it right because they didn't fund it. And so they just created this other huge entitlement that is really not free enterprise oriented. We gotta have some way to pay for it.
Right.
And primarily, I guess seniors who can afford it could pay for it, but maybe you need some help for low income seniors. Okay, let's design a program like that. But instead, no, it was just purely very, very small payroll tax, and it didn't pay anything close to the
revenue that was needed.
That was needed. Yeah, yeah. And so here we have Republicans advocating for a program that could have been designed more along free enterprise lines, but no, they don't.
Right.
And so, yeah, we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we think of Republicans as trying to defend and uphold free enterprise ideas.
Yeah,
often they do, but often they don't.
I think often they do, but it's really kind of ancillary to it. In other words, they just, you know, they just happen to be defending lower taxes because it benefits them in the moment, as opposed to this is the principle we need to operate by. Funny story about the low flow toilets. They've done a doozy on household appliances in general, and it happened during the Obama administration. And the other day I was walking through the house, and there's this sort of wall, half wall, that separates our kitchen from the main part of the main level of the house. And so you can hear what's going on in the kitchen, but you can't see it. And I was walking through the dining area, and I hear my wife, and she goes, "Obama." And she said it like she says, "Leland," you know, like when I'm in trouble, you know? And I go, "What, honey?" I said, "What's going on?" She goes, this daggone dry dishwasher. And she goes, and I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, I have to run the dishwasher now two times instead of one because of this supposedly efficient dishwasher. And she was, the reason she said Obama was because during his administration, there were these big pushes for these regulations to create the low flow toilets and the use less water. Yeah. And it's like the irony, she's so frustrated because she's like, it doesn't wash the dishes now. I have to wash the dishes before I put the dishes. Well, I'm the guy that washes the dishes in the house, but I have to actually wash them before she can put them in the dishwasher. So we wash them twice. So we're using more water, you know? And so it's like, it's just this ridiculous. This is what happens when government gets involved. And, you know, Republicans have done it too. It's not just Obama or the Democrats, but, you kind of
it's a feel good exercise that doesn't accomplish anything.
Right.
In fact, it's negative. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so, and like I say, I think oftentimes the Democratic Party will propose things that are way out there, and the Republicans only bring it halfway back, and so they end up with half crazy. So it's just not.
Right.
It just, and so this is another example.
One of the concerns that I have, though, is that I talk to my friends on the left, and I think there are legitimate problems that let's move aside the Marxists that are burning buildings and attacking federal courthouses now. And let's just talk about our friends that are maybe to the left of the political spectrum of us. And when I talk to them, they identify real problems that I absolutely agree need to be addressed. And we can, you know, we'll leave a bunch of them off the list today, but let's just focus on the economic ones. It is true that there are people alive today who could not buy a home wherever they wanted to because of the insidious and racist practice of redlining. It is true that we have neighborhoods and areas of various cities that are filled with people who are locked in a sort of generational poverty situation. And I understand generational poverty because my parents broke a generational poverty, or my dad did, broke a generational poverty cycle. Now, we don't have anything, didn't have any. I was actually quite poor growing up, but we had everything we needed. Whereas the background that my dad came from, they didn't have everything they needed. Like it was that kind of poverty. So he broke that cycle, but that's very hard to do. And he did some superhuman things in order to achieve that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What I fear, and I'm not at all arguing that we need to give a bunch of subsidies and all this kind of stuff, but I am arguing that as conservatives / libertarians, people who want everyone to be free and have these opportunities, why do we not, and how can we approach those problems with free market solutions, but at least approach those problems, acknowledge those problems exist, and say, here are some solutions tailored to solving these issues so we can get everybody at the table with an opportunity to eat?
And I agree with you that there are some problems that are of entrenched poverty in many parts of the economy. And a lot of those folks in entrenched poverty are minorities. And that I think that the problems, though, of entrenched poverty are really a great deal due to government programs gone awry.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be fixed and fixed in a serious way. And I think they can be fixed with less money than we're currently spending.
Right.
So, for example, we have a host of support programs, Medicaid, housing assistance, and there's a temporary assistance for needy families, food stamps and the like. And, you know, some people do need some temporary help who are kind of at the bottom of the economic ladder. But the way these programs are set up is that as you advance, say, you know, you get a raise or you work some more and earn an extra $1,000 or something, you lose, you know, $700 or $800 in benefits mm-hmm. if you work and earn $1,000 extra. So
right.
you're working all that extra amount for a couple $100 rather than $1,000.
Right. It's the same. It's the same disincentive to work that the $600 of unemployment is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think another big problem is housing policies.
Right.
In many, many big U.S. cities, they're very restrictive. They limit where buildings can be built,
right.
how big they are, the space, the green space that has to be around them, etc. And guess what? This drives up the price of housing, and it makes it more difficult for low-income people to find a place to live that fits within their income.
So would you design
another? Let me throw out one more.
Yeah.
I think the schooling system, government-run schooling system, it costs a lot of money, and they're very, very ineffective for a lot of low-income and minority families.
Yeah.
And because they're locked in to a lot of the neighborhood school. Luckily, there are some places that have established effective charter schools. But boy, that needs to be more widespread.
Right.
So there are ways in which we need to get away from the current kinds of programs that we have that assist low-income poverty folks. They can be redesigned and made more better incentives,
yeah.
more like market-based incentives.
I don't think
people can improve their lot in life.
I agree with everything you said. In fact, I think you've identified a couple of really key issues. One is education, because the thing
yes.
that my dad did in breaking that cycle was he got educated.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, so nowhere is school choice more important than in an area where people are living in poverty. There is nowhere where school choice is more important
right.
to the parents to help their kids get the next leg up. So that's number one. I thought you identified that as perfect. Secondly, I want to go back to the issue of the assistance. I agree.
Uh-huh.
You know, some people need a level of temporary help. I would rather, if we're giving somebody $500 a month, okay, for a period of time, I'd rather them be able to, as you said, go out and work and earn another couple thousand a month and just say, hey, look, at the end of this time period, that $500 a month is going away, but make whatever you can, whatever you want. Because what that does is the $500 is helping them make ends meet. It's relieving the pressure. They can go work. They have the ability then to build up, to add more, to do whatever they've got to do to get out of those circumstances when that runs out
okay.
versus that continuous, like you said, disincentive to work. It's the same problem we have across the economy where the harder our work, it seems like the government takes more of it. I had one of my best
yep.
months last month. I had one of my best months. And I'm not bragging because I know a lot of people are struggling right now, but I literally had one of my best economic months in a long time. You should see how much the government took of that. It
mm-hmm.
literally
right.
was like I worked twice as hard for a month and I got a quarter of the benefit of that. You know, that's the same
yeah.
thing that we're doing on that level. I guess what I want to
yeah.
say, though, is I feel like that the right side of the aisle doesn't have a passion to take these solutions, or they're afraid to. I don't know. To these problems. It's almost like we just want to ignore it, forget it, and move on, or we think that we can't fix those problems with free market solutions, whereas I think if we brought the same level of passion that we have for freedom for everybody to solving those problems with these free market ideas, we would be seen a whole lot differently. Don't you agree?
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, to their credit, the Cato Institute, which, of course, they're pretty libertarian-leaning, or very libertarian-leaning, they have proposed a lot of these ideas that we're talking about as
yeah.
bringing more market-friendly reforms into welfare programs, getting rid of the government interference with, you know, low-income people's advance. And, you know, really, this is all about bringing people into the system of free enterprise in a way in which they can succeed.
Yes.
But you know, I do. I mean, even like in education in K-12, you know, there's a lot of special interest groups that don't want to see competition mm-hmm. for the system.
Yeah.
And you know, we see that in the Kentucky State Legislature, and probably any other state house as well. That you know, the school system, particularly in rural counties, are big employers. They have a lot of political sway, and you know, if you want to get elected to the state house, you've got to, you know, there's political influence there from school districts,
yeah.
And so you know, there's an entrenched political interest that even for Republicans as well as Democrats,
yeah.
That it's difficult to overcome.
Everybody has to pay homage to certain things as they try to rise up in the political spectrum. It's like, you can't not be seen supporting schools, and the only way to support schools is to do what that special interest wants, as opposed to advocating for ways to make schools better, more efficient, and a better product. Yeah. There was one other area I want to talk about, and then I want to make sure we've covered everything you want to cover. But and that is the national debt. I'm deeply concerned. I saw Nikki Haley had a tweet yesterday where she was like, you know, we kind of got to take on this national debt thing. And I was like, thanks for bringing it up. We as conservatives complained that Obama almost doubled the national debt. And here we sit 3 years later with a Republican president who is on track to do even more. And he doesn't even seem to care about it. Why should we as free enterprise lovers be concerned about the national debt?
I think fundamentally the concern should be about what government is spending our resources on. And if we took care of that, I think the debt would take care of itself.
Mm.
But right now, the U.S. government is spending, it just went up by a whole bunch here this last several months. But even before that, we're spending about a little over 21% of U.S. economy is determined by federal government. So, you know, a fifth of all dollars, and another about 13 or 14% is determined by state and local governments. So over a third, perhaps around about 35% of all things that get produced and made in the U.S. economy is determined by some government. That's a lot.
Wow.
But we really need to think about what are we getting out of that? And if they were doing great things, okay, but they're not.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of waste and whatnot, and we have all kinds of inefficient redistribution programs where we take money from one party, give it to another. And these are if it's not fulfilling any important function, that we need to scale it back.
Right.
Now, and what happens when we don't do that is, well, we run up these massive amounts of debt, you know, federal spending that's not, you know, financed through borrowing, and then we run up these massive amounts of debt. And I guess the long-term concern, perhaps, of that is that, you know, there'll be some sort of a fiscal collapse where it will become the government is incapable of paying the interest on the debt.
Right.
And then all kinds of things, bad things have to happen. Now, in fact, Argentina has gone through this. They're actually renegotiating a debt default deal right now. But right now, I think the U.S. is a ways from that. But, but still, it's not something we want to even come close to. But fundamentally, you know, I think the U.S. government, a lot of state and local governments are spending money on borrowing money, taxing to raise money, and spending it on things that are not worthwhile.
Right.
And that's fundamentally the problem.
Let me
back up 1 second to something we were talking about before. One of the most important thing that government should be spending money on is good legal system, good police,
right.
You know, to, and the like, so we can have, we can all have our rights to ourselves and our things.
Right.
But there are also some things that are hard for markets to deal with. For example, there is no market for clean air. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to define who owns what.
Right.
And so we have pollution problems.
Right.
So governments need to deal with that.
Right.
We also have things like where it's difficult to charge people for, where you have to if you're running a business, right? You've got to have customers who pay, campaign customers. So, for example, like if we provide, if the federal government provides an army to defend us,
right?
Well, we can't go around and say, well, you didn't pay, so you get out of the country. But there are also things like road systems in dense cities where it's difficult to charge people for, you know, for every road that they go on.
Right.
Because you don't know where they're going. So these are some things where private individual transactions are difficult. And so government needs to play a role in those.
Right.
But that's a limited set of things. And so, yeah, there should be government in those limited things. But and so this gets back to the role of government in a free enterprise society. But there is many, many, many things that governments do that are way beyond that.
Right.
And it's just wasting our money.
Yeah. Anything you wanted to cover before we wrap up?
Well, I do think just one more thing, I guess, and I think that, you know, having this a more deeper idea of a clearer idea of what capitalism is, meaning self-ownership, voluntary activities. I think having that attitude out there, appreciation of that, kind of helps a lot, because the attitude, if we adopt this attitude of voluntary trade and exchange, self-ownership, it does encourage a culture of tolerance and respect.
Yes.
And for one another, which is really, really important and needed for people of wide-ranging backgrounds and whatnot to get along with one another. And I think the more we rely on government, the more we fight with each other by lobbying and shouting at one each other and having protest and counter-protest. And that's just not a way to have a peaceful society.
It's hard to dislike a guy or a gal who's meeting a need you have at a fair price.
That's right.
Right?
That's
and
right.
That, after all, is what capitalism is. Identifying needs
and, that's right.
and meeting
and
those
they're
needs.
Not, and they're not lobbying Frankfurt to get money from your pocket.
Right. Right. They're just saying, hey,
they're
I got this product. Here's what it is.
Right.
Here's what it costs. If it's worth that to you, we'll take it. And then it solves the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Brilliant. I love
Frankfurt
it.
Frankfurt or Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. John Guerin, we're going to have to continue this conversation. I really enjoyed it. There's probably a lot more we could get into. We could go a lot deeper in some of this stuff. I love the podcast format because I'm not interrupted by commercial breaks. I don't have to hurry you along. Or any of my guests along, you know, we can just have a free flow conversation, and I really enjoy it. So thanks for coming on today. Hopefully, saner minds will prevail. People will start to recognize the value of freedom, and you know, freedom comes with responsibility. To be free means I am free to do the work I need to do to survive, to thrive, and to advance my family and my interests. That's work. That's hard to do.
Yep,
but I'm free
absolutely.
To do it. And we live in the best country in the world where we are the freest to do those things. And we need to protect that at all costs. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
All right. Great talking to you. Dr. John Guerin with not only the Pegasus Institute, but also the UK Gatton College of Business. Thanks for your time today. Have a great day, sir.
Okay, you too. All right.
All right. What a cool guy. I've known him for years, and I've had an enormous amount of respect for him because he is a true free market thinker, and he's a thinker. He's a thinker. He's an intellectual, and he's very, very smart, very, very intelligent, and very kind guy. So really love him to death. I hope this helped. You know, we had my liberal friend, Senator Morgan McGarvey, on yesterday, and I wanted to sort of counterbalance that with a defense of capitalism. I believe so strongly in liberty. I want liberty. I am so passionate about liberty. I want liberty for everyone. And it breaks my heart that we have people in America that are caught up in generational poverty it breaks my heart that we have people in America who are still alive today who could not eat at the same restaurant that I did. And I believe that the solutions to these problems lie in more freedom, not less. More freedom for all. But I also believe that as conservatives, we have to be just as passionate about solving those problems with free market solutions as we are about solving our own. And again, I think that the capitalist system, the free market system, it's really about just making sure every one of us, regardless of our economic background, regardless of our social status, regardless of our race, creed, etc., have an opportunity to sit at that table and to eat. And that's how we'll make a more perfect union. And I believe freedom, liberty, and more of it are the way to achieve those goals. All right, thanks for listening. It's a free podcast. Get your friends to download it. Super easy. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio's app. Just search The Disruption Zone. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host, Cameron Mills, who I promise will be back soon. And also thanks to Dynamics Productions for their help in Lexington, Kentucky on the production of this program, and JP Web Design, also in Lexington, Kentucky, for his help with the program as well. I am Leland Conway. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, the Gram, it's at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. The Disruption Zone.